Once again, my name is Victor Ngobeni, and I'm here, as you can tell, with my colleague, friend, Megan Redemeyer. And this module is all about how teachers can use basic ICT tools to support teaching and learning. And Megan will take us through this one.
Thanks, Victor. Thanks for having me. There's a wealth of technology out there. What was hot and happening a couple of years ago is now old hat, and teachers are moving on to new things all the time. But the aim of this module is to try and encourage teachers to make the most of what they've got. Maybe your school is incredibly well-resourced and you've got access to high-speed internet and Wi-Fi in every classroom. So maybe it's about using that and not being afraid of it. Or maybe it's about realizing that your school is not that well-resourced, but how can you still make the most of what you've got? So that's what this this module's all about.
And I think this is the biggest module in terms of the expected time.
Yes. So all along, as part of this virtual Academy for Africa, we've been saying that what we're doing here is just trying to contextualize the course for teachers in Africa and to provide a bit of an introduction to each module that's available on the Microsoft Educator Network. So once again, we do hope that teachers will go to the Microsoft Educator Network and that they will do the full Teaching with Technology course. And when they're there, they will see that this one, Use of Basic ICT Skills to Support Teaching and Learning, covers the most topics.
Yes, yeah.
We don't have time today to cover all of these topics in great depth. So what we're going to be focusing on is internet safety and how to use search engines effectively. And we're also going to be touching on using technology for collaboration. But we would encourage people watching to go to that module online and to look through all the topics that are appropriate to them.
Right. Speaking of, hardware, what advice can you give us in terms of hardware to support teaching and learning?
Well, Victor, there are a wealth of choices out there.
Yeah.
And schools need to select the hardware that's going to be most appropriate for their circumstances. Obviously, they'll also have a budget, and they need to buy equipment that's going to last, that's going to be rugged, that's going to stand up well to use by a lot of children, so that they can get the most value out of their technology budget. There are a couple of pointers here to consider. When choosing learning devices, you need to think about how you're going to manage the logistics. Are you going to go for a computer lab situation? And if so, how are you going to let teachers book that venue so that it gets used across the school and not just by the teacher who teaches computer literacy or IT as a subject? Or maybe you might think that actually the solution for your school would be best served by a trolley solution, a trolley of laptops, or perhaps a trolley of tablets.
Yeah.
And you need to think through how you're going to keep that trolley safe, how are you going to charge it, how are you going to connect to the internet in different environments. And this picture on the screen of three young boys, they're using Intel Classmate devices.
Yeah.
And those are perhaps a good choice for young learners because they're quite small and also they're quite rugged. So you could drop one and it wouldn't smash like perhaps a tablet might. So maybe this is a good choice for younger learners, but perhaps older learners would be frustrated by the small keyboard or the small screen size, and perhaps older learners can be trusted with equipment that's a bit more delicate. So it's about choosing the devices that are appropriate for your situation and where the best learning is going to happen.
But let's be honest, the internet can be daunting,
It certainly can be. And, you know, we hear horror stories. We see examples in the news of children being sort of stalked by pedophiles online and coming into all sorts of danger. Or perhaps we've heard about people who've tried internet banking and their accounts being raided. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of horror stories out there. But to say don't use the internet because there are dangers out there is about as silly as saying don't drive in a car because you might have a car accident.
So maybe what teachers need to do is to teach learners how they can treat information from the internet, how they can assess or evaluate the credibility of the information, right?
For sure, Victor. Students are going to encounter the internet anyway.
Yeah.
So rather let them use the internet as part of a learning activity so they can see the power of the internet, but under controlled, in a controlled environment where there is a responsible adult present. And while you are doing a learning activity, use it as a teaching moment to teach children about internet safety, about being a good digital citizen. And there's some steps here for planning an effective lesson using the internet. First of all, you've got to actually plan the lesson.
Mm.
It's not as simple as saying,
I'm going to take my students to the computer lab
and let them do research. Or we're doing a project on weather, so they must type weather in Bing and see what pops up.
No.
A lesson like that is a recipe for disaster. There's too much stuff out there. A teacher should plan the lesson. Perhaps it's worth collecting resources in advance, especially if the school has a slow internet connection or limited bandwidth. A teacher might want to look in advance and see these are three or four sites that are worth going to, and the teacher might want to cache those sites in advance so it doesn't take that long when students look at them, or a teacher might want to download two or three nice videos that they found and to rather use the bandwidth on getting two or three nice videos downloaded than have a class full of learners all trying to access YouTube at the same time to look for stuff. The next step is then executing the lesson and thinking through the logistics. How are you going to get some technical support? How are you going to control students sharing the devices? Are you going to make them work in groups and perhaps assign different roles to different group members or let the students sort that out for themselves? And then the final step is perhaps the most important, reviewing the result. Thinking what worked, what didn't work, how could I do this lesson more effectively if I were to do it again? Because that's part of the learning cycle. There are always going to be those lessons that are complete disasters. Mm. We've all had them as teachers. But the key is to
reflect. Yes.
So that you don't make those same mistakes again. Or when you've done a lesson that's gone really, really well, how can you do more of the same? Or how can you share that great learning activity with other teachers so that they can also try it out in their classes?
Speaking of a lesson that went really, really well, we've got a project here by a teacher from Durban. You want to tell us about that?
So Charlie Wiggle was one of our winners in the Microsoft Expert Educator competition a year or two ago. And his students really used the power of the internet in such a productive way. Charlie teaches middle school, so 10 to 12 year olds. And he found that his students really weren't reading aloud that well. They didn't put any expression into their reading. They didn't take care to choose a good book to read aloud when they had to do it as an English assignment. So he thought if they were doing it for a real activity and for students to really listen to the results, they'd put a bit more effort into it. So he got his students to find a good book, to read it aloud, to record that book as an MP3 file, and to then upload it to the Pay It Forward wiki. And he then got blind children at a local school for the blind to access those stories so that they could listen to other students reading really good books. And he found his students did a great job of reading and that the blind children really enjoyed it. But they thought, this project hasn't gone far enough. Mm. We've only made 20 or 30 stories. How can we grow it? And they used the power of Facebook to ask their Facebook friends to all go to their wiki and to also record and upload a story. And so the project grew. And those Facebook friends then asked their Facebook friends until the wiki had a couple of hundred stories on it from children around the world sharing what they had done. So a great example of the internet being used really effectively.
What about safety? Safety is a big concern using the internet, right?
It certainly is. It's a fear for parents. It's a fear for teachers. And they worry, you know, if I take children to the computer room and let them loose on the internet, what if they access pornography?
Yes.
The first thing children are going to try is going exactly to the places that you specifically told them not to go to. So,
but these days you do have like filters that you can install on the computers just to filter out things that you wouldn't like your students to do on the internet.
Exactly. Teachers can download the Microsoft Security Essentials for free for their computer labs, and they really should install that software. They should install antivirus software, and they should keep an eye on the settings so that only really safe content can be accessed using school facilities. But of course, they should also be aware of the dangers. No matter how good your software is, your filtering is, students are going to come across things, perhaps at home where the internet's not as well protected, or in an internet cafe. So it's
more and more about educating them than trying to protect them from this thing.
You don't want to scare them.
Yes.
But you should also make students aware of the possible risks. So let them know that they shouldn't be giving out personal information on the internet. They shouldn't be giving out their address or their telephone number. They should think really carefully before sharing a photo online, particularly with somebody they don't know.
Yeah, you often find this an email saying, "I'm so and so based in whatever the UK, and I've got loads of cash. Send me your bank details."
Exactly. So don't follow those links. Don't give out information to people you don't know. Be aware of scams that are out there. Know that your bank, for example, will never send you a link to click on. You should rather go into your internet browser and type in your bank's URL yourself rather than clicking on a link. And just being aware, if something sounds too good to be true, chances are you haven't won the sort of lottery that you never entered. And you should not be giving out your bank details so that they can deposit the billions that you've supposedly won. Be aware of things like passwords. Make them something that's hard to crack. Keep them secret, don't share them, and also make children aware of the fact that once something's out there, it's very hard to get back.
Yeah.
Be careful of what you put on your Facebook profile or share in social media, or a sort of photo of yourself sort of missing half your clothes that you sort of think is fun to share with a boyfriend or a girlfriend at the time.
Later,
happens to that image when the relationship's over?
Even when they pass school, they go to varsity, and that image is still there.
Exactly.
They want to apply for a job.
Potential
people check these things, right?
Potential employers look at people's Facebook Facebook profiles. Yeah. They look at their Twitter account.
Yeah.
If it's something that you wouldn't be telling your grandmother, chances are you shouldn't be putting it on social media. So without terrifying students, make them aware of the risks. Give them an opportunity to use the internet, but use it appropriately.
One of the things that they can do and use appropriately and help them use the internet effectively are search engines. And these can be very helpful in teachers planning their learning activities, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
The challenge with the internet is not finding information. It's very easy to get information, but there's so much that you could never possibly look at it all.
It's more like taking a mouse to a cheese factory. It's overwhelmed.
Exactly. So how can you narrow down that search so that it gives you fewer results, but more of the kind of thing you're actually looking for? So there's some pointers there about getting what you need. First of all, selecting the appropriate tab. If you're looking for a photo or if you're looking for a map, look under that section of the search engine so that you get what you need. Then choosing your keywords carefully. If you want a photo of a tornado, don't type in weather. Type in tornado and type it into the photo tab so that you get what you want. And then if you want a tornado that's happened recently, give the name of the state where the tornado was so that you limit the results you get.
Speaking of that, there's a feature on Bing search engine, the Microsoft search engine. Let's say you're looking for a video on tornado. And I like this because instead of opening that or downloading the whole file, when you mouse over the video, it starts playing.
Okay.
Sort of giving you a preview.
So
and you can decide whether it's something you want and then you download later.
So that's really handy.
I think
for
it's useful,
teacher,
yeah.
Who's looking for video clips to play in class?
Yeah.
That you can have a quick look, especially if it's at a school that maybe doesn't have a really great internet connection, and you don't want to waste time or bandwidth
downloading the wrong ones.
A lot of videos or downloading ones that aren't suitable. Another way of getting what you want is to say what type of file you want. If you're looking for a PDF, then say that's what you want. Or if you're looking for a PowerPoint, if you put, .ppt, then that's the kind of results that will come up and will limit the time that you spend sort of going through the results that the search engine produces. There obviously are great advantages of using a search engine. Back when we were at school, we had a school library, which wasn't that well resourced. And then if you needed something more, you'd have to go to the municipal library in town, which also wasn't an abundant source of up-to-date information. But now with the internet, you can get things at your fingertips. There's a huge quantity of resources. There's amazing diversity. You can get videos, sound clips, photos. Whereas, if you're looking in an encyclopedia, you really are limited to two or three pictures and a text description. So the internet's great, but it's well worth learning some tips for using it effectively.
The great thing, as I said, with Bing, they've built the search engine in a way that it's easier to find stuff, isn't it? Like when you open the Bing page, right there, quickly you can search images, you can search videos there.
Yes. So those are those tabs that I was referring to earlier, and depending on what type of content you're after, you can choose the right tab from the start, and then you type what you want in the search box. You can use quotation marks for a whole phrase, which then limits the results that pop up, but are more likely to get you what you want more quickly. But my favorite feature of Bing has to be the Bing photo.
Of the day.
Every day it's something different.
So it's a conversation starter as a teacher.
Some of these images,
you can start your lessons from the picture itself.
Exactly. And actually, if you mouse over it, it gives you a bit more information about what that image is about. But it's a great 2-minute introduction to a lesson if a teacher sort of has this on the screen. And if it's something appropriate, a teacher can spend 2 minutes just giving students that window to the world. And a quick bit of general knowledge or just learning something new.
Great. What about the collaborative technology? How can we use technology to ensure that kids collaborate? And what are types of collaborative activities can we get out of this?
So I think one of the best things about the internet is the power of collaboration. You hear people talking about Web 2.0.
Yeah.
Because when the internet was first there, it was pretty much a one-way street. You could look at other people's content, but unless you had some pretty good computer skills of your own, it was hard to put your own content out there. Whereas now with social media, with blogs and wikis, it's very easy to share your content with others and to collaborate. And that collaboration can either take place within the class with different members of a group playing different roles and each contributing some component of a common project, or there can be collaboration with the whole wide world.
Yeah.
We've heard of great examples of lessons where students have been able to Skype an expert, somebody who maybe wouldn't have half a day to go off to a rural school to go and speak to a group of 9-year-olds, but who is willing to do a quick 15-minute Skype chat about being a paleontologist or being an engineer.
Yeah.
So it's a great way of collaborating with experts, and it's a great way for classes around the world to collaborate with one another. There's a great mystery Skype sort of project on the go.
I've heard about mystery Skype.
So teachers ahead of time decide they're going to set up a mystery Skype, and one class then Skypes with the other class, and they have to ask one another questions to get clues to try and work
identify
out
where the other guys
class is. So are you in the northern hemisphere or the southern hemisphere?
They say, no.
Is it winter where you are now? Is it summer? Are you close to a beach? And gradually, through a process of elimination and beefing up those geography skills, students get to chat to kids in another country.
Fantastic. Would you like to close off with this project, Tollbooth Movie Maker?
So this is one of my favorite projects. The two teachers who produced this project, Louise Clark and Kim Jackson, were winners of the Microsoft Innovative Educator Expert Competition a couple of years ago, and they had a great collaborative project. Their students were doing this book, The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Juster, as their class reader. And they read only the first chapter of it, and then the teacher stopped. And she said, okay, now you know about the main character. His name's Milo. He's a little boy who's got this phantom toll booth as a mysterious package that arrived in the post. And if he goes through this phantom toll booth, it takes him to the mysterious lands beyond. Before we carry on with the book, imagine what these phantom mysterious lands might be. What do you think might happen? What adventures
so
do you think
So kids have
now
to create their own...
Their own, like a choose your own adventure book. And in groups, they worked out where he might go, what might happen to him. They wrote the scripts. They drew all of the illustrations themselves. They scanned those in. And then they put those images into Windows Live Movie Maker to make their own little film clip with the sound of one of them reading their script as the backtrack to the movie. Each girl had a responsibility. So somebody who was really talented at drawing drew the pictures. Somebody who was good at writing wrote the script. Somebody who read really well was their narrator. So they each played a role in putting together this movie, and then they invited the parents to come to a movie evening where they saw what the girls had created. So what a wonderful way of sharing their efforts so that the kids would really put some effort into it. And this sort of collaboration, it would have been possible without the power of technology, but technology really takes the lesson up a notch and lets students and teachers do things that would have been very difficult to do without expensive camera equipment or editing software just a few years ago. This project only used free tools, and they produced this great lesson.
Great, fantastic. What a way to close off. And thanks so much, Megan, for that very informative session. And
and you're up next, Victor, with Module 5.
Yes, I'm up next with Module 5, which is all about how teachers can organize and manage the use of ICT resources in the classroom.
So I'm looking forward to that. And I do hope people will join us for that next Microsoft Virtual Academy.
Great.
We'll see you then.
Don't go away.
Bye.
Bye.